Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lau.
And I'm Yujiro.
Slow as ever.
They probably knew from the...
Yeah, I was thinking that. Yeah. The tone of voice. Actually, I think it was pretty funny when I'm kind of jumping ahead here, but when someone recognized us because of our voices on the podcast.
They actually recognized Christos.
Yeah, I love that. They recognized... Yeah, but then they kind of said, oh, yeah, and you're Wayne, and you're Lyle.
So no, they didn't say you're Lyle.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right. Well, they said you're Wayne, so that's all I care about.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty funny. Kind of a slight ego boost.
It's nice to feel important.
Mm, it is.
I watched a couple monster movies. One was called Monsters.
Right. So Original title.
I knew what I was expecting. And the other was Skyline.
Which was about a monster.
Alien invasion. Oh. Yeah. Think about it. Here's the danger when picking a movie you don't really know a lot about is...
It could suck.
Yeah, it could suck. Which it did. Which it did. Yeah. Gosh, that sounded so much more profound in my head. Now, you know you don't want to read too much about a movie before you watch it because you want some surprises. But then after that movie, I was like, I wonder who the directors were, Strauss brothers, but I think they like to call themselves the Brothers Strauss.
Calling the Brothers Grimm.
So I was like, oh, I wonder who these guys are. So I look them up and they're like special effects artists. And I was like, oh, okay. That's kind of why the movie was like a Michael Bay movie without all the talking and dialogue, character development. Yeah, it was.
So imagine you take like a Michael Bay movie and you only leave in the explosions. That's Skyline?
Yeah, although I thought they were better at filming the action scenes and that you could actually follow it. It wasn't like all shaky and blurry.
So you could tell who died.
Yeah.
So it was just better than a Michael Bay movie.
No. He's filmed better than a Michael Bay movie, but I've lacking in story.
I've never found Michael
better
Bay
than Michael Bay
really good on story.
That's the point.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly what I'm saying.
That's the joke he was trying to make.
The action was better, and they left out the crap plot that Michael Bay usually puts in. Hence, better than Michael Bay.
Actually, I see where Chris is coming from.
Oh, I see. No.
Okay. So
instead of trying to do something that you know you're going to suck at, just cut it out. Focus on what you're good at. No, still sucked.
Yeah, no, it's just, yeah, it's set in L.A., and you're briefly introduced to some of the characters. And I thought it was like a TV series because they used a lot of TV actors. I'm not saying TV actors are bad.
This is the reason there's on TV.
If it made the jump. But it turned out it was just a one-off movie. Mm. Yeah, it's L.A., and then, oh, it does one of those, you know, where they do that kind of the cold start or where they show something that's going to happen actually later in the movie. So they start with something where the aliens, like, Let's start their attack. Mm. And then they do that for a few minutes and then they go, oh, 15 hours earlier. And it shows prior to the attack. And they kind of talk about stuff that's completely irrelevant, but I suppose that's to establish the characters.
Right.
And then they do the alien invasion. But you know it's an alien invasion movie, so it's like if you're watching like an episode of a TV series and it shows like Starbuck or Apollo in their little ejection seat in the middle of deep space, you're like, what happened there? I want to know how we got to that point. Mm-hmm. But here, you start with the alien invasion, and then it goes back to prior to the alien invasion. You're like,
I know what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's not like you're, ooh, what? Sorry, are aliens invading in this alien invasion movie?
It's like that movie? Whole Titanic movie. I mean, come on, the boat sinks.
Yeah, well, imagine, that's a good example. Imagine if the boat's sinking, and then it goes, oh, a week earlier, and then does the whole movie, you're kind of like, well, I kind of knew it was going to sing.
Well, that had Leonardo DiCaprio in it, so people would watch it.
Right. Yeah.
Skyline did.
Okay. Yeah, that was it. Oh, no, I'm now imagining it with DiCaprio. Oh, that's it. I take it back. That's a great movie. Yeah. A lot of pathos in that movie.
It's Leonardo DiCaprio for the no plot.
But compare, so people, if they want to watch like a bad movie and compare it with a good movie, you could watch Monsters and see how that starts and see how that links to the entire story and actually adds to the surprise of the story. Hmm. And Monsters, the premise is six years. Yeah. Did you watch it? No. 6 years before some sort of a NASA spacecraft found some alien, evidence of alien, life form. And it's coming, returning to the Earth, and it breaks up in the atmosphere, and the pieces fall on half of Mexico, and that becomes infected. Mm. and the aliens or monsters start springing up there. Hmm. But that's all about the characters. It's a real character development movie. And it was really, you just watch it going, where are they going to go with this? Not because you're annoyed or anything, but you're just kind of drawn into the story.
Also watch it, though.
Yeah. And I didn't know
it. Skyline.
Those are good.
Cool.
Or one was good.
One was good to talk about. Yeah, good to make fun of, yeah.
I suppose, but since you guys hadn't watched it, it was kind of just me talking. So we'll move on.
All right.
To news that we all have. We went to a JIG game day.
JIG stands for Japan International Gamers Guild.
Woo!
And no, it's not. There's not a woo at the end of it.
Yeah, there is. It was awesome. It was woo. I had fun.
All right. No, yes. I definitely had fun too. Sorry.
Your enthusiasm threw us, Chris.
So we went to a party and I got really drunk. I can't remember what happened. Anyway, yeah, JIG was awesome. I had a lot of fun.
But I married her.
No, she's pregnant.
I was wondering where that was going. So anyway, yeah, I thought the game day, it was a game day. I thought it was pretty good.
Well, we played games. It was a day. Yeah, it was a game day.
All right.
And they actually called it a game day.
We gamed that day, therefore it is a game.
Games were done. Day was good.
I was brought to a room. It had board games.
Still don't know where it
lasted
was.
Lasted about a game. It lasted about a day. Yeah.
All right.
So what were some of the games that we saw? Saw King of Tokyo. I'll start, I guess.
All right, go ahead then.
Saw King of Tokyo. I got to play Elfinland for the first time.
What?
Oh, yeah. Battlestar Galactica Pegasus Edition. What else was there?
Well, Yujiro and I got to play Quarriors. Mm-hmm. That was the first game we played when we showed up.
So what do you guys think of Elfinland?
Good.
Because I'd played it. Wayne had played it before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really good. It was a really nice kind of just bust out and play. It wasn't really deep or involved. It was really easy to pick up, but it still was a lot of fun. It wasn't overly simplistic.
Well, it was fun up to a certain point. I think I yelled at Lyle, and he couldn't do any do-overs.
Yeah, you were pretty...
I kind of killed it for you.
Well, I didn't know we were playing Street Rules, so thought it was a gentleman's game.
Smash that bottle of Coke there.
About that.
No, that's fine. Yeah, I guess I shouldn't have been able to do that to go over.
Had you played Elfinland before you drew?
Nope.
And what did you think?
Judging by your tone, you never will again.
No, you never played it.
Oh, you didn't play?
Yeah, I didn't play.
Oh,
no. Really?
Weren't you in the last
one? Sorry, for some reason I thought you were in the last one.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
He was playing a different game at the
time. Then that explains your tone. Nope.
That's right. My apologies. I guess it was Christos we were playing with then.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. I did like that game.
Yeah, it's great.
Just because it's kind of like a sleeper hit.
Yeah.
I can see it getting played out, though.
I think it falls into the same category as the Settlers of Catan, where you wouldn't want to build a game day around that game. Because, one thing, it only plays for, 30 minutes?
Right.
Yeah, it's similar to the other one, Formula Day.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. It's really quick and easy.
I think what happened, I was still just bitter for my loss at Battlestar Galactica Pegasus. So when you said, oh, can I do that over? I just said, no.
All of us are big fans of Battlestar Galactica, the core game. So we finally got to play the expansion for the first time. Or one of the expansions, the Pegasus expansion. So what did you think?
Yeah, I'm going to pull a huge meh as well. It wasn't as good as I imagined it was going to be.
Right.
I guess it incorporates a lot of new rules. There's new Caprica and the Pegasus can be added on. Mm-hmm. Is that right? We only played with the Pegasus Rules edition, which allows you to have a silent leader, so someone who's declared as a silent from the very beginning of the game, to work with or against the players with extra rules. And besides that, it operates pretty much the same as the regular game, right?
Yeah, I mean, they added the treachery deck.
I guess that's as well.
But it actually didn't really do that much, so no one wanted to use those cards or take advantage of the new mechanics.
The cards weren't
there was also
as
a new rule of the risk.
Yeah,
to lower the difficulty level.
How did that work?
Of a challenge, you could opt to say we're going to risk this if you have a particular card that says that you can risk it, and it would have a
reckless. That was it.
Oh, reckless.
Yes.
Reckless. Sorry, and it would give you the rules of what it does. Like, so let's say it lowers the difficulty level by 4. So all the cards that go in are played under these reckless rules. So that means these treachery cards, they have, if they're played into the pile, then when you resolve it, they might have a reckless thing that'll trigger. But if nobody's doing that, then there's not a lot of point to throw in the treachery cards, unless just to count as negatives.
Yeah, I played as a silent leader, and I had a few of those reckless cards, but I didn't find any that were really worthwhile. there was not a good point in the game where it would have made much of a difference. I think the one that I got most often was all the other players also have to draw a treachery card, which I suppose could be good for like seeding doubt among people, but with having no Cylons revealed at that point early in the game, there's not really much of a point to it.
No, that's the time to do it, so that the Cylon, the unrevealed Cylon...
People start questioning who it is.
Well,
They would get those treachery cards without having to draw them, and therefore they wouldn't
The problem was, is suspicion. I was a character who could draw treachery cards.
Right.
Everybody knew that. I was set it on my thing, and I also happened to have been the Cylon from the beginning of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm the only one drawing treachery cards, it's really difficult for me to convince the players mm-hmm. that all those treachery cards they keep coming up. Yeah, that are just from the Destiny deck, especially if there was three. And there was one instance where I actually did throw in some bad stuff and three cards came up. I was like, I wonder who threw in that third one.
Yeah, I don't know. As a Cylon leader, it was actually a little bit boring.
That, hey, you look like you were sick.
Yeah,
halfway through the game, you just kind of look like you had the flu or something.
Oh, really?
that's kind of what I thought from the beginning. I think as we described it, just on the outside, it looked like you were going to be kind of Dracula from Fury of Dracula,
mm-hmm.
you know, but with kind of less to do.
Yeah, exactly.
So, that's part of the reason why I didn't go for a Cylon leader, because...
I knew it suck.
Well, not that I knew it would suck. I thought it had the potential to suck, because part of the fun of the game is, not knowing...
some potential suckage here.
Yeah, exactly. Not knowing who the Cylon is, being able to kind of, play around with that. And if you start the game saying, yeah, I'm a Cylon...
But you could actually work with the humans.
I know,
depending what your agenda is.
And that was what made it really hard.
So then it would be the flip side, is you're trying to convince the people who are automatically not going to trust you to trust you.
I suppose.
Then if you have some, imagine if you had a Cylon leader who was actually trying to work with the humans, and then you had an unrevealed Cylon, then, people are automatically going to think it's the Cylon leader, of course. So it might allow the unrevealed Cylon to continue to throw wrenches into plans.
That's true, but I think you have to, I'm not...
I say it's too early to say.
I'll agree with that. My concern is that you get dealt a card that tells you whether you're a sympathetic or hostile Cylon.
Yes.
So it's not like the player really gets a choice. So you could, pick a Cylon leader and say, okay, I want to try and do this game where I convince them I'm helping them. But then I got the hostile card, which means I have to dick them over anyway.
And the
point is that then you still want to convince them that you're there to help them, because people don't know what card you drew.
Yeah.
I'd like to play it again, and I'd like to be a Cylon leader just to see how it would play.
The mechanics were interesting to it, but the gameplay wasn't. Very interesting.
Well, because you don't get a crisis card, do you?
You can get a crisis card.
Oh, that's right.
Depending on which space you went to, you could draw different things. Like, there were definitely tactics to use for any of the things. What my special mission was to have the humans lose, but not have damage on the Battlestar Galactica.
Right.
So that means that I had to focus almost everything on getting the dials turned.
Hmm.
Problem was that I didn't have much control over that. So it was...
And we turned the dials for you, pretty much.
Right. So, well, the main way I could go at it was the crisis cards, which was fine because then I could play with which ones, but I'd have a choice of, I draw two cards, choose one or the other,
right.
And that's it. So if the cards don't work out, I had to wait for the end of everyone's turn to do something. That's why I didn't have a lot to do. So it may have just been the role specifically that I had, that mission wasn't so good, but it still was a bit boring.
Do you think having more actions might have helped? Or?
Yes, but then again, I had the same amount of actions as everyone, but being like Wayne said with Fury of Dracula, it's just because I wasn't part of the team, I was just kind of sitting there while the team did their things on everyone else's turn.
This is going to sound bad. I'm not saying you weren't proactive, but perhaps the Cylon leader needs to be more proactive, and they need to sort of make themselves a part of the team, and maybe not in a good way, but just to say, throw out some misdirection, be like, no, you don't want to do that.
I did, and that was the most fun I had.
Yeah, exactly, and I'm like, you do that every time. Just
it took a little bit. The treachery cards, when the game started, I was trying to use the treachery cards as if I were a regular player or a regular Cylon, which didn't work, because the treachery cards only had pretty low values on them.
Right.
So I figured out later on in the game that all I had to do was throw in one card. It didn't matter the value, and that would everyone would go, oh my god, he's throwing the card, we got to do something. And that was good, so I didn't understand it at the beginning, but... And that also, at the end of the game, when the Cylons were revealed and we were getting right down to the wire, then that was great. And that's always a real strength of Battlestar, is the last rounds are always so exciting.
Not if you lose, but...
No, I still enjoyed the second to the last round, where we weren't sure we were totally screwed. We might have made it.
That's, and then I was the one who drew, yeah, we were totally screwed. By giving Christos that double action card, and he goes, my first action, I'll reveal that I'm a solid. I'm like, oh, dude. God damn
it. That was a good play.
So it was that bitterness that led me to...
Why would you... And since he had, like, shouted out that he was a Cylon...
I was in the bathroom during that time, I think.
Oh, I see.
I remember coming back from
then
the
bathroom... Then I guess that would be the other human player's fault, not telling you...
I don't know. I remember coming back from the bathroom, seeing the situation on the board and saying, okay, Christos, here's the two action card. And he goes, my first action, I reveal him a Cylon. My second action, that's... I'm like, oh...
It's a great impression of Christos, by the way.
I was trying to do the super deep voice since... He's the only one who has one.
Like, yeah, for my first action. Cylon. I didn't say it was slow.
I said he has a deep voice.
No, he's got a slow deep voice.
No. Yes.
We also tried King of Tokyo.
Mm. Awesome. Rawr. Really cool.
Didn't he?
Yeah. Really? Yeah. Crap.
He came for Battlestar and went home right afterwards.
What game did you play?
Yeah, I'm beginning to wonder why we invited you, Joe. I enjoyed that game a lot. So it's a Richard Garfield game.
Creative Magic.
And you got like a very tiny board. It's pretty much
tiny box.
And a very tiny box, yes.
With very big dice.
very big dice. All right. So we got the size out of the way. But it's basically King of the Mountain.
Yeah.
We were playing with only the Tokyo, not Tokyo and Bay of Tokyo.
Right.
So you would just put one monster, only one monster could be in Tokyo at one time.
And they scored victory points for being in there.
Yeah. And all the damage that they inflict is inflicted on all the other players who are outside of Tokyo.
Right.
And then all the flip side is all the other players, when they inflict damage, it's only inflicted on the monster in Tokyo.
Right. I thought that was pretty... I don't know. The package, the game as a whole package, I thought was really well put together.
Mm.
Because like the artwork on both like the cards, the pieces, the board, the box, everything kind of really lent itself to that kind of big monster battle, like the kaiju stuff. And you look at it and you're like, yeah, okay, you know, I wonder how this is going to play. But and it's like, all I have is my monster, this little sheet, and some six huge dice that don't fit in your hands.
Actually, that was the part that I liked the dice so much, because when you're playing a giant monster, you don't want these pit little dice. You want these things that dent the table when you throw them down. Those were so cool. It's such a good addition to it.
I guess. So I could see... like a warning hazard on the box, you know? Danger.
May destroy your friend's skull.
Yeah, exactly. But I thought it was really well put together, and it's like a really fast, enjoyable game.
Yeah, yeah. I really enjoyed it a lot. And how about Quarriors?
Yeah, you did play Quarriors.
Yeah, you drew.
Don't deny it.
Yes, I played Quarriors.
Sound like a bad thing.
It was a pretty quick, fun game, I'd say. And it's a deck-building game, except you use dice.
So it's a dice-building game?
Yeah. you basically use what was the currency in Quarriors?
Quiddity or something.
Quiddity, yeah. Basically use money to buy creatures and
stuff. So you asked me what it was, and you're like, yeah, you might use money. You spend points. Like, why the heck did I rack my brain remembering what they were?
Well, it's just easier to say money than like quiddity.
Whatever they were.
Yeah, whatever they were.
All right. It was essentially Dominion or Thunderstone with dice.
It looked a lot like Thunderstone. It's gonna have like fantasy.
Well, I guess. Elements. Well, the premise is it's kind of magic-esque in that you kind of summon creatures to fight the creatures that the other players have summoned, and you score victory points if creatures kind of stay on your table at the beginning of your turn. So I guess similar to King of Tokyo, well, you don't have to, but at the beginning of your turn, if you have creatures out, they must attack all the other players' creatures. So you just kind of go around like that. And then any survive, you score points. And they're just like one of those deck-building games. There's kind of like a... it's not really called anything, but I guess there's kind of like the village or the communal area that you buy dice from.
Sounds like it's called something.
I forget what it's called.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember.
So you lied. It's not called anything.
All right. Yeah. But
much like
the market, like the
maybe it's like essentially
Thunderstone's
like
market.
I guess so. You could call it that.
They probably forget what quark it.
Or something. Quark.
It's not that you could. They did.
All right, they did, and I forget what it is. All right, can I make my point? Right. And the cards have kind of, you know, the creature or spell, the effects, and because they're dice, it lists or it shows all six faces of the dice that correspond to that card. So you can look at the card and say, okay, this is what's on the die when I roll it. I thought that was, it took a while to get around. I'm like, oh no, that's just the one die.
Mm-hmm. So you just kind of roll once and then you match it to whatever's on the sheet.
Well, no, it says this is what's on the die.
Mm-hmm.
So if you roll this, then this effect happens.
Oh, okay.
Sort of, right, so there were six pictures mm-hmm. indicating six faces of that die.
Mm-hmm.
And you just kind of like, you have this bag that came with the game, so you just reach and grab eight dice, I think. Six dice at the beginning of your turn. And just like drawing a hand in Thunderstone or Dominion, that's what you roll.
Okay.
So, and then when all your dice disappear, you just put them back in the bag and shake them all up again.
Okay.
Really enjoyed how the game could change based on the types of creatures in the marketplace. Like, mm-hmm. the first game, we had a lot of cheap creatures, so people were, like, buying them up. But second game, yeah, everything was expensive, so no one could buy anything. So the strategy changed to how to make the most money possible in order to buy all these big, expensive creatures.
Right.
Well, that's cool. So it was good enough to play two times in a row.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
It didn't suffer from the problems of Dominion. Because Dominion can feel like you're playing however many games of Solitaire.
Oh, yeah.
And that you don't really interact with people. I mean, it's not super interactive, but the fact that you have to fight the other player's monsters, I think, kind of made it better than Dominion.
Cool.
So, yeah, I would...
Sounds good. Wish I had a chance to try that one.
Yeah, it's pretty good. They had it here at the local game store, but it was in Japanese.
So,
how much was it?
It was around 5,000 yen.
Yeah.
Same as King of Tokyo here, too.
Oh, King of Tokyo's here?
Yeah. Again, Japanese version.
Oh, okay.
Which kind of fits a little bit.
Yeah, doesn't it, though, huh?
Kind of fits.
All right.
Yeah.
Or fits really well.
Yeah. Well, hold on. Tokyo.
Oh, but we're in Osaka.
Oh, uh-oh. Yeah. That's what threw me. Right. Yeah. And we also played D&D 4E. That was a little mini game.
Yeah.
Nice little flashback there.
Oh, yeah. You mean if we're playing D&D 4E.
Yeah. Okay,
yeah. Yeah, it's actually weird thinking about it. Like, we played our campaign for... Almost 2 years for it. It was the first time I'd actually ever played 4E instead of run it. So
it was a nice treat for you.
I had a lot of fun. I really did.
So even though it was just an encounter, what did you think as a player?
Like I said, I really enjoyed it. It was only a first level thing. And I remember way back when we did first level, that the combats were a lot more fun in lower levels than they were in higher levels, just because of there weren't so many numbers and stats to keep track of. Because that's what broke the camel's back in the end.
Right.
Just too many conditions to keep track of.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, at low levels, it was a blast.
Yeah, everyone's looking at me now. And yeah, I did enjoy the game, yeah. Because I love getting my tactical mini war game fix. That's all I have to say about it.
I will go home now.
All right, thank you. You know, our game of King of Tokyo was the inspiration for this episode and the topic of gamer etiquette. Because three quarters into the game, Chris gave up because he wasn't going to win.
Which is a giant faux pas in your book?
Yeah, and that was a faux pas. And I certainly complained bitterly at the table. It's like, you can't quit.
And then again at the train station.
And the train station.
Wait, and the train, and the train well. Ride home.
And then probably. The emails afterwards. Yeah. I think there were 4 or 5 hours of today, yeah.
And what had happened is there was clearly, it was either going to be myself or Christos that was going to win the game. It was four players, so that means Wayne and Chris.
Wayne was nowhere near the running.
So Wayne and Chris weren't in contention, so Chris had decided that if he couldn't win, then he would just support Christos, you know, who was ahead, who was the leader, and he wouldn't follow a plan of trying to knock the leader out.
You're just bitter because he didn't follow you.
No, he did.
No, the silence there said it all.
I was burping. That's sure, what I was doing.
Sure.
I didn't want to burp into the mic.
Covering your mouth like, how am I going to spin this?
No, I was being polite. Yeah. And that's not the first... Sorry, Chris, but that's not the first time he's given up in a board game. So there was a case of... in StarCraft, and again, he wasn't going to win. So then he decided not to attack the leader because, as he put it, along the line, I'm paraphrasing, well, I'm not going to win, so what do I care?
Rebuttal?
Yeah. So for rule number one in gamer etiquette is don't give up in a game. I think that's very important.
I agree with you in principle. However, there was a time in playing Twilight Imperium 3. Remember when we didn't give up? In fact, I took your home system, even though no one apart from your team was going to win. Therefore, prolonging the game another, 30, 45 minutes?
Yeah.
And I believe you even said, oh, well done. I know you had to do it. But did you have to do it?
In my defense, we were playing on the floor, And it was a hardwood floor, and it was really uncomfortable.
And it's Twilight Imperium 3. So
but I did applaud. I said, oh, well done. That was a good tactic. And it, yeah, you needed to do it to play it out. And then, yeah, I could have lost, or me and my partner could have lost in that game because we had to take back the home system. And if we weren't able to do it, then we wouldn't have been able to get the victory points, or collect them. What do you guys think about that, about not giving up? I can see if it's two people and you are just getting your... or your butt handed to you, and you say, look, I'm not going to win. Let's just end the game, or let's start over, or something like that. I can see that. That's fine, because it's just the two people. But when you have like three or four, five people, and one person gives up, then the other guys are still going to keep playing the game. So you kind of just have a person going through the motions? Or
cool. Well, okay. I want to say the difference between giving up and like leaving the game, because you know, getting up and walking away from the game would people wouldn't be able to play.
Right, well, that's why I'm saying giving up, not getting up.
Yes. Yeah. Just want to make sure, because I think that would be really mean. As far as the King of Tokyo thing, it wasn't so much that I didn't want to play anymore. It was more that I didn't want you to win.
Yeah.
Which, after you said it, and I was going home that night, and I was thinking about it, like trying to rationalize what I didn't. You're right. It was really immature. I'm sorry. But the way the game had gone is, let's see, you got a special card that took away 5 victory points, and the max victory points is 20. So it's...
Well, a quarter. He got it twice.
That was the other thing. So I took that. Then he got it again. And then I tried to... he had also some armor on so that he couldn't take the first point of damage. And this is a really low damage game. So I was trying to buy this special card that allowed me to do an extra point of damage to maybe go against it. But he also had another card that took away the magic points. And the dice weren't with me for, I think, 3 turns. So I built up some magic points. And then you took them away, used them to heal yourself.
The energy points.
Yeah, basically, I mean, you very, very efficiently and very skillfully, I must say as well, kicked me out of the running for the game.
So in disgust, you quit.
No, but that's the thing. I didn't quit. I played until the end. But my goal wasn't to win, because I wasn't going to win. It was to keep Lyle from winning, which was immature. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, there you go. All I wanted was an apology, and I used the podcast as a public forum to get it.
But
thank
I would like to say, because I think it is really rude to just kind of stop playing game in the middle. And
in StarCraft, you just didn't attack.
That was 4 years ago, man. I just don't remember.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah, let's talk about grudge holding as well for another topic, huh?
All right, well, we'll move on. What are you, holding a grudge? Is that... No, I think, is that something to add for gamer etiquette? Because in that... Not only, like, you could say, like, somebody, if you win in one game, and let's say the game has possibilities of alliances, like Twilight Imperium 3, or even a role-playing game, do you think it's bad gamesmanship to hold a grudge from a previous game and then play like you're trying to replay that game? So you won't form an alliance with, or you'll betray an alliance with somebody in this version of TI3 because in the last game, that guy won. Or in the last game of Arkham Horror, they won. Oh, no, that's a bad example, since that's you're cool, all playing right. together. Yeah, no,
Warrior Knights.
No, that's just not nice to do.
I guess the problem I have is if you try and replay that game, you know, like it's in a game like Twilight Imperium 3 or Warrior Knights or pretty much any competitive game, I think it's fine to say, you know, this guy won last time, or he burned me on something last time, so I'm going to make sure that doesn't happen again. And I guess it's a little bit maybe dickish to... try and to make your goal knocking that person out of the game. But if you're just going to try and play smart, or at least play a little more aggressively against that player, then I don't have a problem with it. But if you're going to try and replay like an old game somehow, going through the same things and playing the same either cards or moves, then I would kind of have a problem with it, because why not? You're playing a new game, so just, you know, play a new game.
This is kind of just a hypothetical question, but what if, for example, there was one player who was really good at this game, maybe tactically or whatever, he's just very skilled. Would it be, in that case, acceptable to go into the game with the idea to play against that player specifically?
I think so. And that's personally, maybe that's kind of my magic upbringing, where, I don't know, you're playing a game, and I see it all about kind of like the school of hard knocks, right? You learn by losing. And that person won, meaning, you know, they caused you to lose. So all you can do is attempt to play better.
Yeah.
And if that means, you know, being more aggressive against
that person,
then that's what it's going to take.
Well, I remember my friend, when I first started playing Magic, I got whipped really badly in a tournament game. And he said afterwards, you know, don't worry about it. You know, there's no shame in being beaten by a really good combo. And the guy had a really good combo. And that's absolutely the case. If someone is playing a game really well, then, yeah, learn from it.
Right.
So next time I play King of Tokyo, I'm still going to buy that card.
Sounds like a grudge.
Learn from the best.
So what are some other rules of etiquette that gamers should follow?
You shouldn't, I don't know, you can't hold it against the guy for winning or for playing better than you. Easier said than done.
The guy?
Or girl.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
All right.
Only men?
Only men game. If you're playing War Machine, then yeah.
Remind me to do my no sexism in games.
I don't know.
Do you mean in the game or after the game?
Oh, like, kind of after the game.
Yeah. I think every time you play Fury of Dracula, there's always the... Oh, well done. Yeah.
Good job,
Dracula.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same with Battlestar Galactica. You're like, yeah, good job, Cylons. Yeah.
Well, actually, you bring that up, because in the game, going after the winner is a very important tactic.
In what game?
In some games, like, yeah, again, like TI3, where it's basically pile
on the leader.
Sometimes, just within that game, it can get too much, where you see the guy who's playing the leader just kind of look sick.
Right.
For those turns, as they just get attacked by everybody.
Yeah, it's interesting. Actually, you know, come to think of it, in Elfinland, they provide a way to do that. They have kind of the roadblock ones,
yeah.
And that's specifically to use against other players. And I think the most efficient use of them would be against whoever's winning the game at current. I might be wrong on that, but...
I think that happened in one of the first games we played. I think, like, on the same turn, like, 3 out of 4 players all put down their roadblock tile just to prevent kind of one guy from getting somewhere.
But that said, when we played, Lyle, you and I, well, we didn't use them once, and that was in both of the games. So
they were used, but not very effectively. I just think there was kind of a Cold War aspect going on. Nobody wanted to be the first one to play the roadblock, because then the other guy had the roadblock, and he was going to play it on them if they did. Because that's why I kept saying, hey, I still got my roadblock. I just got my roadblock. Remember that, guys.
I haven't pushed the button on my nukes yet.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't sent them off yet, so don't you send them off.
Swarming it up in the silo. Actually, people did play the roadblock on me in one of the games, and then I was just able to bypass it. Like, you weren't able to completely shut down all the avenues.
Mm.
This is not really etiquette so much as, I guess, just a general gaming thing, but what do you think of house rules? Obviously, it's not poor etiquette to have house rules, but...
Oh, and did you see the house rule he came up with? Oh, my goodness.
Yes. Savage.
Oh, heavens me. House rules, love them. But I love tinkering with games. I love getting dirty in the mechanics. Oh, yeah. And,
I'm okay as long as everyone knows about them, and I'm willing to try everything once, at least, so... Yeah, as long as it doesn't suck, it's okay.
I think you and I have similar opinions on this one, Lyle.
Yeah.
Maybe from a different angle, because, like Chris, I also like to kind of tinker with systems and kind of see how they work. And trying to house rule stuff in the past, unless you're like a professional game designer, you don't usually see the entire impact that changing a rule has on the entire system.
Mm-hmm.
And... you know, if you poke it somewhere, you don't really see all the results. And so it usually takes a lot of thought, in my opinion, to come up with a decent house rule.
Mm-hmm.
And it just changes so much. And it's not like we're in, like, the dark ages of the role-playing game hobby anymore, when all you have is D&D and that's it. You know, you have so many other systems. If you're having to change a lot of rules, just play something else that does that already.
Yeah. For me, it comes down to house rules versus house rule. You know, there's something in the system that bothers you, so you'd make one change. And it's pretty easy for people to understand. But when you start to make multiple changes to the system, it becomes very difficult for the person to keep track of, because then they have to look at their rule book. Then they've got to look at this sheet in addition to the rule book that explains all the changes that have been made to the rule book. And
that's if the GM has printed up a sheet.
Right. And if they're just firing stuff out, and yeah, I definitely agree with Wayne, is that a lot of times there's a knock-on effect or a domino effect, as you make this one change and it causes all these, or has all these consequences, and you might not even anticipate what those consequences are. So you don't realize that this particular house rule has just made this race or this class or this action weaker and this other one stronger. Mm-hmm. And yeah, if you're making a lot of changes to the rules, then you got to wonder, it's like, oh, couldn't you find, isn't there a system that might be better for you?
Right.
But yeah, I can understand people want to play with the mechanics. Sure. Yeah. But it can get confusing.
Yeah, that's the way I kind
of see it. I think what can be really frustrating is if a rule that, yeah, of course, if there's a rule that everyone hates and it's house rule, then of course, then that's brilliant. But a lot of times house rules are just somebody's preference. And you're like, well, I actually like the actual rules for this particular thing. Man, you changed it, so, yeah.
Well, I mean, in that case, it could be something the players and GM can like talk about. And it's like, here's a house rule. I don't like it. What do you guys think? Keep it or toss it?
That's really good. And that can link into the etiquette is if you're introducing a house rule, maybe run it by your players. And if they're okay and put it to a vote. I mean, if you're saying, hey, we're going to play World of Darkness. I was like, all right, cool. Everybody knows what World of Darkness is. So they might be agreeing to play that game based on the fact that you're playing World of Darkness or you're playing GURPS. And then they get to the table and you say, okay, we're changing this. And you're like, well, I've committed to playing GURPS. I haven't committed to playing Wayne your GURPS. Version. Yeah, Wayne's GURPS. Wayne's GURPS.
I was thinking that. Yeah.
That's the first Wayne's World joke we've made.
Yeah. Too bad. Why did you have to say GURPS? Why couldn't you have said World of Darkness? And it could have been Wayne's World of Darkness.
Oh, if only I had anticipated that. Well, I'm certainly not a comedian. Okay, we'll just re-edit this now.
Yeah.
No. Anyway, moving on. So as a game master, then, I think, yeah, you should, if you want to do house rules, or of course it can go if players have a particular house rule that they think would be cool, then run it by everyone else. And if everyone else or the majority says, yeah, okay.
It's just another set of eyes on it, too. Yeah. Because, well, like, how many times have you come up with something?
Yeah. And somebody goes,
it doesn't even have to be in gaming, just in general. And yeah. Someone else looks at it and they says, you know, what is this? And you're like, you look at it and you're like, wow, that doesn't make sense. You know, it makes sense to me because I know the process I got to it, but someone just looking at this, it's not going to make sense to them. So it's like, it's why books have editors.
Yeah. And somebody could say, oh, but what about this?
Yeah.
What about range combat? And they're like, oh, yeah, that just totally ruins that.
Mm-hmm. Some systems are more forgiving than those others. Like, house ruling for 4th edition, it's such a solid mechanical system that throwing in rules here and there could really easily break something, it seems.
As opposed to
GURPS, for example, I mean, GURPS has 101 splat books, and they all have different additions and changes to the rules. Seems very forgiving. Though I wouldn't call myself an expert on GURPS by any means.
Well, are those kind of like rules options, though?
Of course they all are.
It has a lot of options, so I guess what Chris is saying is more modular, so it's easier to plug in something new and make those adjustments.
Yeah, and GURPS is designed to be toyed with.
And also the vote can be a little, if you follow along, like voting on the house rules, that can be a bit, not annoying, but you might see it as a chore.
Yeah.
So then it would kind of force you to limit. If you're going to propose a house rule that you think is pretty good. And if you're proposing 5 house rules and you really don't want to do 5 votes, then you think, that's right. Are those rules worth putting them to your players and discussing and then voting on? If they're not, then you shouldn't even bring it to the table.
It's probably a pretty good benchmark.
Yeah. You were talking about advice, Chris, before the podcast?
Oh, yeah. One of the things that I saw online as far as gaming etiquette was don't give people unwanted advice. But kind of as you pointed out, Lyle, you surely shouldn't give unwanted anything. So,
but just advice in general, because you might think it's wanted.
And it's not.
Well, yeah, people go, well, can I give you some advice? Even that can like trigger somebody if they're just getting like savagely beaten.
Screw you.
Yeah, even asking, can I give you some advice, is sounding like, okay, you're playing terribly. Do you want any chance of like salvaging your pride? Yeah, and the person's like, no.
And you hope they say no instead of flipping the board, which is also good gaming etiquette. Don't flip the board.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that.
Don't give advice?
Yeah, don't give advice.
What about post-game advice?
I think it follows the same rule.
I don't know, but a big part of games that's really fun is like the post-game rundown. I really enjoy that.
I suppose. I think it all kind of goes back to Magic, but like when I would play that, after the match I said, what did I do wrong? or do you have any advice? Then fine. But if after the match, the guy's just gonna go, oh yeah, when you did X, you should have done that, or you should have done this other thing over here. Well, it's kind of like, screw you. Mm-hmm. You won. You're just rubbing salt in my wound.
Yeah.
So, also, if the person says, oh, you mind if I give you advice? As Lyle says, it kind of signifies, you're playing poorly. Here, let me help you. And, I don't know, I just don't really like that. It's fine if one of the players says, what would you have done differently in my position? Or if you were in my position, what would you have done? Or can you give me some advice? Then I have no problem with it.
Well, you can always feel it out. When the game's over, you can say, well, huh, well, what'd you think of that? And if they're like, it sucked and walked away, obviously they don't want to talk about it. Right. But
I think a good indication is, like what Wayne said, if the other, let's say the loser, initiates the discussion, then that's a good indication that they would be open for advice. Mm-hmm. But if they just are kind of quiet about it, or just, oh, good game, you know, they could be a good sport, good right. game. And just kind of leave it at that, and
pack their stuff up. And,
yeah, then it should be left. Yeah.
Well, I assume
walk out of the room.
Again, I was thinking Magic. You know, at the end of Magic, you pack your stuff up. You go to the pairings to see and where you sit at the next table.
And you go. They pack for 2 hours.
You hear a gunshot. And they don't even have to say something as explicit as, "Oh, what did I do wrong?" They could say something like, "Well, you know, I thought I had you with this," and you're like, "Well, actually, no, because you didn't know I had this card."
You had no chance to beat me.
Yeah, you'd think, but actually there's no chance.
Yeah, oh, how cute. You thought you were close? Yeah, no.
Yeah, no, but then I think that opens up the dialogue, and then you can say, well, that actually was earlier in the game when you decided to charge instead of attack, charge instead of shoot me. You know, you should have, like, shot me more, because my army is actually, you might not have noticed, but it was really weak against range combat or something. So don't initiate advice. All right, well, thank you for joining us. We have some rules to follow in all your games, as well as a strong recommendation for King of Tokyo.
And Quarriors.
Hey, was that a strong recommendation?
Yeah, I like it.
Okay.
If you like one of those deck-building-style Dominion games, I would recommend Quarriors.
Okay.
And if anyone out there has played the new Pegasus version of Battlestar
Galactica. New-ish. New in that it's not old.
New for us.
Yeah. Maybe we were wrong about it in our evaluation of it.
Well, so. I gave it a try again.
Yeah.
I gave it Pegasus a try again.
I gave it a meh. So if you disagree with me, come on the forums and talk about it.
Debate, Chris.
No. Of course, they'd have trouble finding you on the forums.
Yeah, that's true. Hoping you weren't going to say that, but I...
Trash talk!
Cool. Anyway, thanks for joining us again on Idle Red Hands. Check us out online, www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. Listen to us on the website, on DriveThruRPG or Stitcher. Post in our forums, on the Facebook page, or comment on the shows. We'd love to hear from you. And yeah, sounds good. See
Bye.
You guys next time.
Bye. Bye.
DriveThruRPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week, and we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. DriveThruRPG, the one true source for RPGs.
Oh,
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.